Welcome everyone to the HP Global Employee Ownership Podcast Series. Today we have with us Joe Mastropolito, Division President of HB McClure, or HB as you'll hear him call it. And we're going to talk about his different experiences in general contracting and subcontracting, the role of curiosity in work and life in general, and the importance of people in any organization. As always, we have with us CEO of HB Global, Bob Whalen, and Senior Vice President of People and Culture, Stacey Baum. Just a few housekeeping items before we get started. We recognize that this podcast is available to the general public, but we just want to say that the views expressed in it are in the context of HB Global and may not apply to broader audiences. With that, Stacey, take it away.
Thanks, Jamie. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Stacey. It's usually Joey. Just so.
Yeah, I know. So we're very excited to have you on the podcast with us today. And I think where we want to start is right after high school, you joining the military, talking a little bit about that career and what that meant to you and your future. So I guess first I'll say thank you for your service. We appreciate that. I'll let you tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, the high school I went to, I grew up in a town in western Pennsylvania, heavily Italian, heavily Roman Catholic. So when I got out of high school, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I went and joined the Army without my mother's and father's approval. I was only 17, so I had to get them to sign the paper. So I took a bus to Pittsburgh, but they wouldn't let me join until I got their approval. Now that was in 1974. Vietnam was still going on. So my mom wasn't very happy, but she did sign. And it was really a great experience for me. I was only 17, and I thought everybody was a Roman Catholic Italian in my life until I got to the military. And there weren't that many Roman Catholics. But it really helped me from a perspective of diversity and really learning how to work in a different environment. I mean, certainly it brought a lot of structure. It was just a great experience overall. In a time when it wasn't a great time in the nation, with what was going on. And when I got out of there, out of the military, I signed up for Penn State. When I was in the military, we were with, before they had satellites and GPS, we were the human GPSs. So our jobs were to set coordinates for radar, guns, and everything else. So I went to Penn State and got a surveying degree for 2 years, but didn't want to do that, and I wanted to be a formal engineer. So I wanted to go to Purdue, but I met my wife, didn't go to Purdue, end up going to Penn State and getting an engineering degree, which all worked out really well for me. First job was with U.S. Steel in Pittsburgh because I grew up out there as an engineer, and it was really exciting. I was in in all the steel plants in Pittsburgh, and we just toured a pipe plant. That was kind of like a mini steel plant. It was really exciting. I learned a lot about people, construction, unions. It was a whole different environment than in 1984 or 5, U.S. Steel laid 3,000 white-collar workers off in one day. I was one of those. I just had a son. We were like, oh, boy, what are we going to do? So I ended up going through a lot of newspapers, and I got a job with Clark Construction in Washington, D.C., and they were pretty much a smaller company, not like they are today. And that's really got me excited to the construction industry. And Clark is a very good company, one of the tops in the country. And back in those days, I used to ride the elevator with Jimmy Clark, the original Jimmy Clark, who's a really interesting individual if you read any bio on him. And I worked there for 8 years. Last 5 years, never left 4 blocks from the White House. Great jobs, but we wanted to raise our kids in Pennsylvania. So that's how I came back to PA. It really wasn't about money or anything else. It was just to get back to an environment that we felt really good about our kids and what we wanted to do. So I ended up working for a local GC in Harrisburg, and that was 1991, I think, somewhere back there. And when we started there, we were like a $30 million GC at best. And I got started in the healthcare side of that industry, and I really enjoyed that. So for the best part of that, I was mostly healthcare and higher education. And we grew that that company to $400 million, $350 million over that period. I felt really, really good about it. It was a good environment. And I ended up becoming the president and COO of their corporate group. However, at some point I said, man, I want to do something different. So this was really different what I did. I went to work for a painting company, a union painting company. You know, I went from $400 million to a $3 million business. Now, you might think that's crazy, but what you can learn, I mean, and that's all trademen. You know, we had 30 painters working. There was two or three of us in the office. And it was, you still learn. You learn a lot about the industry. So here I worked in, you know, industrial, large GC, middle GC, now painting. And it was more of the subcontracting community. And then Stacy introduced me to Adam, and Adam Smith. And I have some contacts locally, and I start working with him as a consultant to introduce to him to some of the local, like UPMC and some others. And then Adam made me an offer. And I moved over to HB, and I think the exciting part of that was certainly I knew Stacy and everything she says I knew was going to be good. And getting to know Adam, you know, high energy, you know, really, really out for making the company better, very invested in people. And that was something I thought would be pretty exciting. It wasn't the trade as much as I think it was the culture of HB and Adam and Stacy. That was more about it than it was the trade. So I came over and was going to be in charge of sales, I think sales originally. That changed, and all of a sudden I got the construction side, which at the time I felt was down a little bit from a morale perspective. And I just enjoyed working with that group, you know, in the construction side. And I think we've had the last three years were pretty decent years in a lot of ways from process. And that excited the heck out of me because I saw 31-year-old, 32-year-old individuals really getting excited about working at HB and just seeing progress. And then all of a sudden, someday Adam comes to me and says, hey, would you like to be the president of, you know, HB? I'm like, holy crap, you know. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And he says 2 years. And I said, yeah, I think I could do that. And some people say it should be more than that. But that's kind of how I got here to where I am at HB. You know, I've really enjoyed a lot about it. I think what I've seen since I started in the industry is the focus on people. When I started, the focus wasn't as much on people as it was, are you making the money? Are you doing all these right things? I think the industry has changed a lot in the focus of people. And I think HB is probably further ahead than most companies. I mean, with the ESOP, and I think certainly Bob's, you know, approach to just what he wants to do for individuals. And beyond compensation, it's training, it's feeling wanted, it's the value of everyone that works for us that we appreciate. So that's the biggest piece of HB. The work, I like the work. I like the mechanical work. I feel in some instances, you know, I came from a GC environment, which is certainly different than this environment, but it's not all that different. It really isn't. It's people, whether you're putting in concrete or ductwork, it's really a lot of the same. So that's kind of how I got where I am.
Joe, I want you to know that we feel our word is our bond. But when it comes to the time in your position, we may not be aligned with the time frame that we talked about originally. Yeah. So just so you know that, you know, at this point.
I know. But I have to tell you, I feel good. So as long as I feel good, I enjoy it. I have a good time. I really do, you know. And as you don't know this yet, Stace, but as you get older, you know, like Bob and I, you've seen a lot, so you don't let as much rattle you as you do when you're like you know.
I think that's definitely true.
It is.
And you know, I see myself rolling with the punches better today than I did, you know, earlier in my career. And I think there's some things, you know, that you're less patient with, you know, too, you know, the people stuff,
right.
You know, that, you know, when you see somebody being treated poorly or something like that, I think you have less tolerance to go with the flow, you know, maybe as you did earlier in your career. But I think for most things, you know, experience, you know, really helps you to like level out emotionally of what's going on. And I think it's an important part of leadership too. I think it's what our organizations count on us, you know, to do. And, you know, I found when we were in our toughest economic times, it was important that we're a cheerleader. And when we're doing the best, it's important for us to push the organization, you know, and make sure that we're continuing just to get a little bit better each day. So, you know, and I think you can only pick up some of those lessons, you know, having spent some time.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. The tougher times is when you need more leadership. Most people can do it well when it's going well. It's the tougher times that make the difference. And I think you have to go through enough of those. Not too many, but enough.
Yes, please.
Yes.
So in that evolution, we talked a lot about, you know, your path through, you know, your career in the industry. And what do you think has changed for you as a leader throughout your career? What your focus is or how you bring others along?
You know, it's kind of funny. In my entire career, I never wanted or desired to be a president. I just never thought about that. My goal was always to make the individual, the company, better. That was always, I never ever said, if you would ask me, Bob, even 10 years ago, what do you want to be? And I would never say I want to be the president. I want to make us better. And I think that's what I always strive to do, was just make people and the company I work for better. The position doesn't generate that. It never did, you know, and it just always was about making others better. And even someone once asked me, well, why would you want to be president of the company? I'm like, it's more about making the company better. It's not about money or any of that. That's kind of how I always looked. And that was a day, even when I was in the military, I became a squad leader at 19. And most of the guys that worked for me were there, were older than I. It was about just making people better. You know, that was really what it was about for me.
Joe, I think that's really interesting. And it just shows, you know, some of the difference in people because, you know, I think I started my career being very ambitious and, you know, wanting to take on leadership positions, you know, probably, you know, before I was equipped to do it. And my career, you know, has moved, you know, more from being focused on what I was trying to accomplish for myself early in my career to evolving to being more focused, as you say, just making the organization better, just, you know, creating opportunities for other people. And, you know, some of the things that I talk about now that I'm most proud of are all the things that are happening in our organization that I didn't touch at all.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I had to do with it, you know, at all. And I'm most proud. And I just had a coffee with a mentor, but, you know, I'm still having mentoring meetings with my, and he expressed the exact same thing. You know, it's like, as your career goes on, different things motivate you. But I think this highlights, you know, we start in different places. We have different focuses at different times in our life, you know, but how does that leadership, you know, path, you know, evolve for us over time, and it can, you know, be a lot of different places. And, you know, I'm glad I've evolved to where I am today compared to where I started. Let me just say that.
And along the way too, it does take some learning. And I had I was in Vistage, which is a group of that's all about leadership. And I was in a COO group and then a CEO group. And I had a mentor there that was, he was definitely different than I'm used to. He was he was just different. And he would needle me, drive me, push me to a point where it would make me not happy, you know. But he definitely made me much better. And the biggest piece of the whole thing I think I learned from him, because I was always a pretty decent listener. I don't have a big ego, but really being more curious. To me, you know, I think we see a lot less of that than I would like to see in society and at work. In the technical field, sometimes engineers think they know it all, you know. And even beyond the technical side, it's just being curious. And curiosity to me is asking questions for a discovery purpose, not leading questions. And you know, I'm a big Leonardo da Vinci fan. I read his biography, which is like that thick, and his biography. It was really interesting about curiosity. Probably the most curious guy ever. And I think it's one trait that I'm pretty good at. I've gotten better because of my coach, amongst other things. So I think if there's, you know, my part of my thinking in business too, and even when I worked in our past group, I took 1 year in helping people become more curious. We had a whole session and the whole year was becoming more curious, because I think you can learn a lot. Like, you're curious, and I know you're pretty curious too. So that's kind of one of the things that have helped me along the way.
And I think that's, you know, people talk about being better at listening. You know, I think it's curiosity that really leads you to be a better listener, because you're actually, you know, interested in what's being said. And so if you start out from just being curious in as many situations as possible, you just become, you know, a better listener because of that. If it's all, you know, if it's self-motivated of what you want, you know, all the time, you're really not engaged, you know, in a way that's being curious. And I think it's such an important part, you know, of leadership and just being a good listener.
Totally agree.
I like the curiosity piece too, because you don't know where it's going to take you. There are so many things that others know and have knowledge about and experiences. Unless you're asking questions, you're never gonna get there with them to learn more about who they are or what they've done. And I think it's always fun, because you have no idea where that topic's gonna lead you.
I agree, totally agree. And I think it's learning to ask questions where you don't think you know the answer. It's just letting someone let it all fly out, not the leading questions, you know. That's kind of important to me.
Right.
But I also think, you know, it's really, the business we're in is still about people. That's really what it's about. Whether it's the GC world or the sub world, it's that's what it's about.
How has your career progression, you think, helped you to this point? And I'm really like focused on your experience as a general contractor. How has that helped you with your experience, you know, both at the painting subcontractor as well as the mechanical, you know, subcontractor?
Well, I think it's helped in a couple of ways. And one is, I think there's an opinion in the subcontracting community that the GCs are working this way. And the reality is, we're all working for the same thing. They really are. They're not, you know, out there, I'm going to do this or do that. They're trying to do the best for their business as we're trying to do the best for our business. I think I also have a better understanding of the GCs are dealing with direct owners that I don't think we truly understand how that works. So at least at HB, we have a $2 million mechanical contract. And we're like, why can't that owner make a decision? Why can't, well, that owner's decision might be $30 million. And so I understand how that works, and some patience and just working through that. The contract stuff is the contract stuff, I understand. But understanding how they work, trying to explain that to our team, I think can help us. And sometimes it's just the simple things that work. Pick the phone up, ask them, they'll usually tell you.
What's the biggest changes in the industry that you've seen, you know, over your career?
The one that I think everybody knows is technology. You know, it's the jobs we built in 12 months are now being built in 8. Better or not, I don't know, but they're being built in 8. Technology, and I do think certainly the trades, the focus on trades today is much bigger than it was back before.
In skilled labor.
Skilled labor. And people in general, look now how hard it is to find people. It wasn't like that when I started. Really wasn't. I used to send resumes out and put up the rejections on my board just to see how many you could get back in the day. That's what we did, you know, back in those days. I think those are the biggest changes, you know. And I'll tell you a story. And you know Bill Alexander, right?
Sure.
So he was on our advisory board like 10 years ago where I was. And he said, and this was, I thought, was pretty interesting. Maybe it was 15. Time goes by. But he says, the companies that have the best people will win. trades, and that was his thing. He says, if we could, you have to have the best people, and you'll win in the future.
I think we're a big believer in that. And
yes,
a little bit of history. The very first strategic plan we put together at HB, when I came to HB, was facilitated by Bill Alexander.
By Bill.
So there's a connection with both companies. And you know, Bill was a wonderful advisor.
Yeah, he's a good guy, really good guy.
Do I know, in a past life, you had some experience and exposure to ESOPs. What have you noticed that's more unique at HB relative to our ESOP and employee ownership mentality?
Yeah, my past life, I mean, there was an ESOP. I mean, it was, and I remember when it was first introduced, there was a lot of excitement. It certainly didn't have the emphasis we have, Bob, and you have. And I think it was maybe the infancy in that and our approach to it. But the difference here is that we're all in. That's the biggest difference. You're all in. I think it goes back to people, which you believe in and I believe in. That's the biggest difference. That the energy for it, the drive for it, I think is it's just much bigger. It definitely is. And I think it really helps us become who we are. You know, at HB we have 265 people, and I mean, if we can get all 265 to believe in that, we will be really, really, really good.
Joe, we've done a lot of messaging around radical autonomy over the last year. Do you feel like that messaging is in line with what's going to help HB be successful? And where do you see it as far as our progression and really getting our employee owners to buy in that they, you know, have the agency to act, you know, on our behalf?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting concept, radical autonomy. I come from an older school. It's still a little challenge for me, just to be honest.
Right.
You know, I'm not gonna. But I do think that it can drive creativity. That's the piece about radical autonomy that I like. It can drive creativity. That's the biggest piece for me. I like, and that should give the employees comfort that they can do.
And we haven't talked much about this in the podcast or anywhere else, you know, but. Do you have some examples of where you think it's been a challenge for your business with the autonomy? Is there some aspects of it that are misunderstood by people that you think, you know, are things for us to watch out for, you know, as we move forward with really, you know, working to give agency to all of our employee owners?
I think where we could help with that, and I don't have examples of where it didn't work, is giving examples of where it can work.
Yeah,
that's where I think where we can show examples where we've allowed someone to do X and they looked at it differently than we would have. And here's what we have. So I don't have it on the negative side. I really don't. But it's just how do we show, like anything else that you do, we show examples. That's what we have to figure out and do. So that's kind of my thought on it. And it is a balance. And I think you've talked about it, too, of how much you let go and how much you don't. And I think that's the piece some of us wrestle with, to be.
Yeah. As I see it implemented, I think one of the biggest challenges that people are fighting with is how you give that autonomy, but at the same time, be there for those that you've granted the autonomy to that may not have the experience, you know, or the knowledge, because they're not always quick to speak up,
right,
you know, about it.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it's just, you know, it's really important for all of us. I think we're better off, you know, for it. But I still think, you know, there's challenges. It's different for a lot of folks. And frankly, there's some folks that don't want it.
That's,
you know,
true.
They really just want to be told, you know, what to do. And you're really pushing them along because, you know, I think it's part of their responsibility to take on autonomy for certain things. But it's, you know, like anything else, you know, there's pros and cons to it. There's pluses and minuses and what things are working and what aren't. And it's a constant, you know, trying to, you know, see where we have to, you know, put an input in to make it better.
Right. I think it goes beyond just doing something, just listening to your employees with new ideas. I mean, that's part of this, you know, radical autonomy too. And not just another executive, but any employee, because I've listened to some in the last, listen to most of them all the time. You know? I'm not sure I said that right, but you know what I meant, right? There's some really good ideas that come out there. And that's the key to, you know, this radical autonomy too.
Well, I think, you know, it really, that listening, you know, is part. I came from outside the industry when I first came in to H.B. McClure. And so I spent a long period of time just listening, because I was not, you know, an expert. And I'm so thankful, you know, really, that the business that I came into, I didn't know a lot about, because, you know, I was certainly humble enough to listen within that business. If I had, you know, come into a business that I had spent the previous 15 years, I'm not quite sure, you know, I would have had the ability, you know, to be open-minded about it and all that. And it's, and I think it's that lesson that I was forced upon me because of my situation. But I think it would have been true, you know, even if I had come into a business that I knew quite well. There's a lot you can learn from the folks that are on the ground in that situation, because not every situation is the same, even if you know the business you're in. There's a lot to be learned.
Oh, exactly. No doubt.
So along those lines, Joe, you've done a really nice job over the years of trying to help leaders and future leaders connect the dots on how to grow those skills and be good leaders. I know you've done a couple sessions on the Gettysburg Battlefield tour. Can you talk about what you like about that experience for a leader, and a little bit about, you know, the leadership journey or leadership challenges? The events are different, but the actual fundamentals are pretty similar today as they were back at the time of that.
Yeah, I think I've probably done about 9 of these Gettysburg battlefield tours, and I had a really good contact at the Army War College. So they would give us some of their best teachers along the way. And I've done them, well, with HB. We did it with just a whole bunch of them. But there's some really neat lessons. I mean, here you have the generals, the best the U.S. has in situations that you think, some of the biggest lessons I learned was biases. There were generals that had really, really serious biases that caused them to lose battles because they didn't like General B. They didn't like this person. Then there's the other side where there were generals put in positions because of their political. And then there's narratives that you read about that really weren't true. So there's a whole litany of lessons that I enjoyed about.
Which are all still happening
all
today.
All that work with us too. Biases. How many people do you know have bias?
We all do.
That's right. We all do. Recognizing where they can get you in trouble.
Yeah.
It was a great experience. I mean, Stacy's been on. I mean, we've done a lot of them, and I've enjoyed it. And there's a whole host of beyond that I've enjoyed.
And I think now you have a new program going with your field leaders, correct?
We do, yeah. We started that like a year ago, and just a foreman. And I've kind of stepped away from it now, but we started it out with, I have a sister-in-law's sister's husband. That's right.
Friend of a friend.
And he was a retired military. So he came in and we utilized him for the first, let's say, 5 months, just some different exposures to leadership lessons. And now we're moving to a little bit more traditional DISC and working through that piece. But I mean, the foremen are our front line. They're no different than squad leaders or whatever. And we think, you know, it's important to grow them. There's an article out there that talks the difference between the U.S. and Russia in the military. The U.S. has the best NCOs, and I look at our foremen as NCOs.
Well, and I think this really highlights, you know, there is a lot of great training, you know, that we're taking responsibility for at the HB Global level to make sure it's consistently applied and that we're doing it. But then there's things that are going on in each one of our divisions to develop programs that hopefully then the best of those, you know, we can learn and translate. So I really appreciate the work you've done, you know, relative to this program. And then, you know, I would implore you, you know, to start the next step if you've seen a lot of success from that, you know, to really, you know, try to get that, you know, out throughout our organization. Because again, this is one of those things that, you know, I think that that's where we're at our best. You know, we're at our best where we're doing experiments out there. Again, not asking permission. You know, right. I don't remember anybody coming to me and asking me if Joe could spend the money on his training program. No. But that we do that, that we make those experiments that you're responsible for on your own P&L. And then when you see something working, you know, we've got to take that experience and we've got, you know, to make it available to the rest of the organization and really make sure it gets pushed out there.
Then I think one other topic I wanted to touch on with you today is just your view on being a good partner. So being a good partner is, you know, one of our core principles here, and how that's shaped your style and career. I know you've had a partnership with a local health facility. How that shaped the way you connected with them and learned more about that industry and how you apply that into the business.
Again, it's a people business. So, you know, being a good partner helps the business and helps individually who you are. And I know my past, whether it's inside the organization or outside, I've had some partners that have really helped me grow, you know, individually, because they may be in a CEO position and I wasn't, and I learned from them. And I think internally to be good partners with our other groups is one area where I think we could grow as a company with our other divisions. And I look forward to doing that as we go forward.
And you've done a good job modeling the give and take relationship. So I'm thinking of an instance where you were working as a subcontractor to a local healthcare facility and invited one of their team members into meetings to learn from your group. So an instance where you saw an opportunity not only to help your team members grow, but to invite a team member from your client in to your location and help them grow and learn from your team as well.
Yeah, we've done that a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah, one was a hospital, I think, project manager. We brought her into some of our own meetings just to see how we operate and how we work. And you know, you expose yourself when you do that. You really do. And we also, I think, invited that same person to an internal Gettysburg trip.
Yeah.
So we looked. And that made a big difference, because in today's world, I'm still close to that person who now heads all the real estate of Wellspan. She didn't at the time. And I didn't do it for that reason. But
no, but it's just genuine desire to help others. And I think you do that really well.
Well, I'm pretty sure it came across to the audience today that you guys have had a longstanding relationship. Maybe, Stacy, you know, you can talk about maybe the things that you've learned or what you've taken away from working with Joe for 21 years prior to HB and now 4 years at HB.
Yeah, so it's been an interesting journey. I will say Joe has been just a fantastic mentor, coworker, leader, boss, friend throughout the last 25 plus years for me. And one of the things that I will always remember and appreciate about getting the opportunity to work with Joe when I was young, obviously we're going way back. I was probably like 10 when that started, but is just his willingness to ask questions and ask my thoughts and what ideas I had or what I'm seeing. He always was inquisitive from the time I started working with him to just being really, really open and willing to answer any question I could come up with, and giving me opportunities to be included in meetings and interact with different groups and different offices. It was really great. We had lots of fun, I'll say, figuring things out along the way. I certainly changed roles a couple times during our working history, and you know, there were things that I didn't have the experience at the time when we were doing some marketing presentations, and we figured it out, and it was, we had fun along the way. So really appreciate just his openness to answer questions, and I feel like I learned a lot.
Well, Joe, I want you to know how much we appreciate your willingness, maybe to change your plans, to continue to give to the folks, you know, within HB and HB McClure, and really across the whole company. So we appreciate your contribution and what you're doing to make us better. And, you know, we hope maybe you'll find it, you know, in your heart to continue to do that for as long as possible.
Well, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate being here too. I do. I just had to tell you, I never thought I'd be here this long, and I love it. I really do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the good discussion today. It was great to spend some time with both of you.
Thanks, guys. If you have questions for Bob, we'd love to hear them and answer them in future podcasts. Feel free to submit them to eopodcast@hb-global.com, and we'll see you next time.